pull up a chair, make yourself comfy, and let's talk guitars. Hi, this is Cams, and welcome to my new podcast, Acoustic Guitar I.O. This is episode one, and I had the very great pleasure of sitting down with fingerstyle guitar player Will McNichol during the annual RMMGA gathering down in the Cotswolds in England. It was a fantastic weekend, and I'm very grateful to Will for agreeing to sit down with me. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Without any further ado, here's Will McNichol. Hello, Will.
Hello, Cams. Thanks very much for having me along.
It's my very great pleasure. Now, I first saw you not that long ago. This would be on the North American Guitar video podcast.
Oh, yes.
With Ben Montague. Mm. And I was just blown away with your style of playing.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And I saw that you were playing a filed guitar. Can you tell us a wee bit about that?
Sure. So I've got three fileds now. I feel very lucky about that. So Roger got in touch. Roger Bucknell is the chap who heads up Filed, and it's based up in the Lake District. And he got in touch a few years ago now, asking if I was interested in a guitar. And obviously I emailed back fairly swiftly and said yes. I am interested in a guitar. And it was the first opportunity I had to have a guitar kind of built to my own spec up to a point. And at that point, I, wasn't really satisfied with what I was playing, because I really wanted a steel string guitar, which was somewhere between classical and acoustic. And even back then, it wasn't really available. Simple things like a wider neck and a 12 fret join, all that kind of stuff. And Roger very kindly made me my first one, which is a custom Alexander. And I was blown away by it, and I got bitten by the bug, I suppose. So then he made me a nylon string, because I play with both when I'm performing live. And then most recently, I got a little Parlor by him as well. And I'm, feeling kind of spoiled by that. But it's each one of them certainly filled a gap tonally for me that I wanted to fill, mm-hmm. both from performance and recording. So.
And are they all similar nut widths and specs?
That's right. So they certainly feel like they're part of a family, I suppose. And especially with the custom Alexander and the nylon string that I play live, I really didn't want to feel like I was swapping between completely different beasts. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel like when I was swapping between them, there was some kind of similarity and feel. The neck profile and all that kind of thing and the nut width are quite similar, but tonally obviously very different. So it kind of ticked all the boxes for me.
And what kind of tone woods are they?
So the steel string is a cedar top. And Indian rosewood back and sides. And the nylon string is a spruce top with Indian rosewood back and sides. The thinking behind it was I quite like the warmer tones that cedar provide when paired with steel strings. And similarly with the nylon string, I kind of preferred the slightly brighter sound on nylons, because nylons are naturally warm, mm-hmm. in comparison to steels. And by kind of brightening them up and warming up the steels, they kind of started meeting in the middle, I guess, tonally, and that's kind of what I wanted. So I'm pretty pleased with the results of that, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I once visited the guitar store down in Brighton.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever been in there? Tamco.
Oh, yeah, I know the one. I haven't actually been in, though.
I went in there, and it's just wall-to-wall amazing guitars.
Sure.
But the one guitar that stood out to me, and I spent maybe 4 hours in there, was a filed Ariel.
Oh, well, that's the Parlor, that's the Ariel. Yeah. I've got one of those, and they are sublime, aren't they?
That was the one that haunted me when I left the shop.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's, completely the same. I mean, I've been up with Roger up at the Ullapool Guitar Festival in the Highlands for the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
And I would always play an Ariel at his stand, and I was always thinking, this is an amazing guitar. I love it. I love small body guitars. And I was kind of settling on, what woods I would want from one if I did want one. And I was playing lots, and everyone was really, really good. But then he made one for the festival, a special one to raise funds for the festival itself. And it was a Cinca Redwood top with a Italian acacia back and sides, and it was beautiful. And I played it, and it was just, this is the one. Mm. This is the one that's connected more than any others with me. And I spoke to Roger about it, and I was like, could you do one of these? And he said he had enough wood from that same batch to make one more.
Wow.
So I was like, that'll be mine then, please.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
And is it Roger who builds guitars from whiskey barrels?
That's correct, yeah. He does an aerial out of that called the single malt aerial.
Mm.
And that's quite a beautiful thing because you can see the natural scorches from the heating process in the wood, and it's just... Yeah, I mean, they do look very special, very unique things.
I can imagine. I wonder if you get the aroma.
Peat. He said, like, when he's working with it, you totally do.
Yeah.
So I think that's an extra perk for him anyway. He's a massive whiskey fan, is Rog. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you're playing here this evening. You're booked to play a concert tonight.
That's correct, yeah.
Very much looking forward to that.
Well,
this is part of a tour for you at the moment.
That's right, yeah. I'm kind of touring around promoting a new album of mine, a new solo album called Dragonflies, Frogs and Bumblebees.
Excellent title.
Thank you very much, yeah. And it was produced by Clive Carroll, who's another player that I'm sure you know and a lot of people know. He's a fabulous player and composer. And yeah, I've been touring around England with... this record, went over to Berlin for a bit at the Holy Grail Guitar Show.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this weekend wrapped up and then off to China for 3 weeks with it as well. China. So, it's going to turn into quite a busy year off the back of that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good.
So is this your busiest year as a professional musician?
I think it's getting that way. You know, it's funny how things go in kind of ebbs and flows, but obviously with a new album, it certainly that has a bit of momentum behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of gigs off the back of that, but also different projects as well, because one of the other things on this album was a kind of like a bonus track, I suppose, with a string quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Which we formed for it. I worked with a fabulous Glaswegian fiddle player and arranger called Innes Watson, and we arranged a tune of mine called Emma for guitar and string quartet, recorded it for the album just to see how it would go. It's been a dream of mine for a long time to do something like that. And we were really pleased with the results. We debuted it at a performance up at that Ullapool Guitar Festival. And the quartet and Innes and I really enjoyed the whole process so much. And we're really thrilled with the response that we're now working on a full album with the quartet as well. Because I've certainly been bitten by the bug of that. It's just sublime. And they're fabulous musicians as well.
So quartet, you've got guitar, fiddle, what other instruments?
So yeah, so it's guitar plus this for the full string quartet. So you've got two fiddles, viola and cello.
Wow.
And we have Shona Aitken on violin one, Innes on violin two. We have Patsy Reed on viola and Alice Allen on cello. And they're all individually incredible musicians, very busy musicians. And Innes is going to pull them all together for this project. And yeah, I was just blown away by it. Just kind of sat down, and as soon as we did a take, I was like, this is working nicely.
So do you think we'll get to see you in Ullapool maybe next year?
Oh yeah, I mean, Ullapool is becoming like an annual pilgrimage for me now. So yeah, next year I dare say I'll be along, and we'll see how it goes, but I'll certainly be pushing the string quartet thing as well a lot next year. So yeah.
Well, I'll look out for that.
Oh, nice. Fantastic. One, thanks.
Yeah. So tell me how you got started. Well, how did you start playing guitar?
Sure, so I started playing guitar when I was six. Pretty diehard classical to begin with, and still very much, love that kind of style and play a lot of it. Continue that training all the way through the grade system, as you do, ending up with doing the diplomas for Trinity College in London all the way up to the fellowship, so kind of took it all the way up as far as I could. But whilst that was bubbling along, I started composing, I suppose, at around about, 14, maybe, having seen Antonio Falcioni live. And he kind of like, you have these moments, right, when you see something live and you think, wow, I didn't realise that was possible. So that happened when I saw Antonio. I was like, he was doing so many creative things, both musically and technically, with his guitars. And I thought, okay, let's give that a bash. So that's when I started kind of dabbling in steel string, trying out some of the more extended techniques. Kind of learning how I go as I was going, really. I've had some fabulous teachers and with the classical stuff as well, but the composition and steel string playing, I kind of just experimented and tried things out. Did a lot of the percussive style to begin with, and just trying all of this stuff out just to kind of broaden my palette, I suppose, when it came to writing my own music. So since then I've just been recording and composing ever since, really. And that's where my career is. I've kind of focused my energy in that side of things, my own material. And although I still love the classical stuff and still play it a lot, I suppose from a professional point of view, I've just ended up settling more with my own music and trying that stuff out, and that's been kind of how I've built my own career.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Clive Carroll earlier. Clive played at this venue last year.
Yes, yeah.
And actually, that I was supposed to be leaving here on the Sunday to drive back to Scotland.
Right.
And everybody said, no, you must stay. Clive is playing on Sunday.
Sure.
And it was one of the most wonderful concerts I ever saw.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me.
How did you hook up with Clive?
So, after my kind of moment of seeing Antonio, that kind of expanded my horizons into a whole different world of players that I hadn't come across before, and Clive was one of those. So I just basically started searching out steel string players to see what was going on, because back then, now it's a totally different scene. I mean, it's exploded over the last kind of 10-15 years, but you know,
acoustic uprising,
but back then, you know, it wasn't so easy to discover this stuff. But Clive was another player who kind of came across my radar. I went to go and see him live in a kind of a local, tiny little local venue. And again, I saw him and I was like, oh man, this is incredible. Because he had come from the classical background as well. So I could see that in his playing, but he had taken it elsewhere. And I was like, well, that is exactly the kind of thing that I'm looking to do. Like, take the classical training and, but then, you know, see where it can take me on the steel string as well. So he was a big, you know, inspiration, and, you know, having listened to him and seeing him play over and over again, he's one of those players who's still capable of, you know, surprising me every time I see him, and I think that's pretty special.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I kind of ended up kind of building, as my gigging was getting, you know, more prevalent, I ended up supporting him, and then seeing him more, like, up at Ullapool and hanging out a bit. And it's a very small world, right? It's a kind of little kind of like community of players, and you just end up being, you know, ending up the same places as one another more frequently. And I suggested a venue for him to come down to, and it's kind of built over the years. Anyway, this album started kind of bubbling along, and I thought I would love to work with someone as a kind of producer and a kind of compositional mentor. And Clive was the first person who struck me as the person to do this, so I kind of asked him if he would.
Wow.
And he said yes, so you know, and that's great. And he was very, very generous, and you know, we spent a lot of time together working through my compositions and arrangements and things, just to make sure they were just right before I sat down in front of the mics.
And where did you do the recording?
I did the recording in my house.
In your house?
Yeah, so again, that's something that's taken a long time, but I finally now got a setup that I'm really happy with to record acoustic guitar, and that freed up time. I think that's the most important thing.
Like, being able to
kind of stay relaxed with it is cool, because I've done, you know, lots of recordings in studios and I have a great time, but you're kind of conscious of the fact that the clock is ticking and the price is increasing as the clock ticks. So it was nice to be able to record it at home. And then I'd send the recordings to Clive for feedback. And I had a friend who is very adept at all things kind of the technical side of recording, let's say, and he helped me with the setup and the production and that realm and the mixing and the mastering, and that's it. So yeah,
well, I've listened to your album. It's on Spotify if anybody wants to look it up.
The
usual music shops online. Highly recommended.
Oh, thank you, Counselor.
It's amazing now that this technology is so widely available. I mean, even 15 years ago it would have been unthinkable to sit in your own home and create something that was such a professional sound.
I mean, it is amazing, and it's quite liberating, actually.
Absolutely.
It suddenly kind of democratized everything. Like, anyone, if they're willing to, you know, it's not even that expensive, really, like, in the grand scheme of things. So you can spend a little bit of money and then free up all your time and just do it yourself. But I have to say, it is very good to have another pair of ears kind of helping you along with the journey, because I mean, I don't think I'm unique in the fact that I can over listen to things and start hearing things that aren't there perhaps, and then, you know, missing some other rather important things. So it's always good to have another pair of ears to kind of go, actually, have you thought about this, or have you tried that? And it's always good to kind of keep your horizons broad, I think, because I've found myself sometimes being kind of descending into this kind of very narrow little spiral sometimes, where you just think, oh no, what about this, what about that, and actually these are details that don't necessarily matter. So yes, having another pair of ears is quite helpful, I think.
Yeah, I understand. And digital revolution, it gives us so much, but it also has a flip side in terms of remuneration for musicians.
Sure.
How do you feel about the streaming culture now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I know that some people are really seem like they're quite against it because of the fact that you get something, whatever, 0.00 whatever pence per stream on Spotify or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's almost something that you have to accept the fact that these platforms are there to kind of give your music kind of this kind of quite broad reach. And I personally am happy with that to happen. You know, I could have chosen not to do it or whatever, but the fact of the matter is people listen to music on Spotify. It's how they, you know, and that's, and but also there's a, I think that those platforms also contribute to a bit of cross-pollination a little bit where, you know, suggested artists or playlists, you can kind of discover new music easily. And I would like to think that it's a good platform to try music. And then if you really like it, then someone, it might be the gateway to actually buying the album as a physical copy or that kind of thing.
Yeah. Or going to concerts.
Oh, it will indeed. Yeah. Or indeed, yeah, going to gigs and that's always a good thing. So I'm not really against it, if I'm honest. I think it's just part of the evolution of how this music business is kind of going. I think it's probably had an enormous impact on record labels and how they earn their money.
Yeah.
But I think for, you know, someone who records their album in their bedroom, like, it's pretty cool to then just be able to very easily just put it up somewhere and anyone in the world could listen to it. I think, you know, that's a pretty cool thing. So
yeah, I mean, you talked there about evolution. There's evolution also in the playing of steel string guitar.
Oh, massively, yeah.
And I'm watching some of the, I mean, we mentioned Acoustic Uprising, which was a documentary recently released about the fingerstyle movement, or the modern, let's see, the modern fingerstyle movement.
Yeah.
It's great for me as an older guy to watch this uprising, you know, coming through the percussive style. It's, things that are being done now on the steel string guitar, I wouldn't even have been able to imagine, you know, 20 years ago.
Indeed.
Percussion and, you know, I mean, I grew up listening to Tony McManus. He's one of my big idols.
Mm.
Pierre Bensouzan, he's another.
Sure.
Tommy Emmanuel,
these
guys. And they were playing the melody and they were playing the harmony and the counterpoint and the bass lines, but it seems to have evolved yet again to a new level.
Sky's the limit now, isn't it? I mean, you know, people are doing amazing things. A lot of kind of modifying of guitars as well and to kind of create all the kind of different effects that you'd want to. And, you know, the percussive players and the kind of multi-necked players. And, you know, it's quite... It's exciting. I mean, it's great to see, though, because Thomas Lieb is another player that I came across when I was kind of like younger, and he was the first guy who I saw really kind of really getting into the percussive side of things, and that was very inspiring as well, you know. And it is great to see that being experimented with, and I think along with that, with the kind of explosion of the platforms like YouTube and things, everyone's able to access it, so everyone sees it and everyone goes wow, and then everyone goes, well, let's give that a go, and then people are kind of developing their own unique ways of doing it. And I think that's what I find quite exciting, is that you get quite a lot of players now who have got very individual identities with how they play. Like, you can definitely tell the difference between different players on the steel string, with, like, you know, Thomas Lieb or Antoine Dufour and all these players who are very percussive in the way that they play, but they have a very different way of approaching the percussion. So that's great. And even little kind of nerdy things, like how you even notate that stuff, is cool to me, because I've been kind of doing a lot of that over the years, and how different players have decided on different systems on how to notate their percussion. Some people have a different stave for it. Some people add it within the same kind of stave and tab, and, you know, the different symbols. And I think even Thomas uses kind of color on the score to denote something that's happening on your right hand, for example, as it's tapping. So that's really interesting, because it's basically like, you know, no one's decided, there's no rules here, like everyone's having a go, and we're learning as we're going, and there's no kind of like set in stone way of doing anything, which is I think that's quite fun.
Have you ever made it over to Thomas Lieb's camp?
I have not, Austria? No, but I hear nothing but amazing things about it. I've had a lot of friends who've gone over and absolutely loved it. I mean, I was tutored by Thomas a while ago at the IGF summer school years ago. I think I went to a couple of them where Thomas was leading them alongside a British guitarist called Stuart Ryan. Yeah. And they were fantastically inspiring experiences.
I saw Stuart at one of these RMMGA gatherings.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, he's Buxton. Another really big influence of mine, and he was one of the reasons I'm doing it professionally, I think. I was very inspired by what he showed at the IGF when I was younger, and that was really, really great. And then my first Ullapool Guitar Festival, that was the first time I was on the bill with like Thomas and people like that, and that was quite a moment for me, kind of being on the same bill as these people I was like, you know, idolizing when I was growing up. And then like having a few pints with Thomas and just kind of chilling out with him, you kind of think, oh, wow, you know, actually a human being after all.
Yes. So,
having had that kind of like, you kind of put them on a pedestal, don't you?
Yeah.
These players, and it's nice to kind of, you know, that they're, everyone's kind of quite humble and just down to earth, and that's great.
I love the sharing culture now as well, where people are just so willing to share what they do. Nobody's trying to hold on to their proprietary styles or anything.
No, I think that's really great. Open. I think there's that kind of mentality of we're all in this kind of rickety boat together.
Yeah.
So we may as well help one another out. I go out of my way to tell people about people that I've been inspired by. Like now that I'm tutoring people, and I'm always so keen to show them like Clive or Thomas if they haven't heard about them, because I go, look at what you can do, look at this, is you know, the stuff that you're opening a whole world. And it's great to see, you know, students of mine taking inspiration from those people as well.
So you have students, do you teach?
I do quite a bit of tutoring. I've got I tutor at one school near me called Bryanston, which is in Dorset. I have a handful of private students, and I have a few Skype students as well. And
that's becoming more popular and more available now we have the bandwidth.
Well, indeed, now the broadband's good enough, and it's great, and I really enjoy it. And I've been doing workshops for many years and that kind of thing, and I love that stuff. Like, I've done the IGF kind of fingerstyle workshop and run that, and that was kind of fun as well. Having been a student on it, then coming back and tutoring it, that was really cool. And you know, very inspired by the tutors as well, people like Stuart and Tristan Sume as well.
I've seen him at RMMGA as
well.
We seem to get a good crowd at these gatherings.
Oh, sure. I mean, the RMMGA is like almost like legendary within the fingerstyle world, I think, in the UK. It's great.
So thank you, Will, for sitting down with me this afternoon. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Cam, for having me along.
If people want to find you online and find what kind of merchandise you have, where would you direct them to?
Sure. Well, I have a website, which is willmcnichol.co.uk. And it's Will, W-I-L-L, and McNichol is spelled M-C-N-I-C-O-L. And pretty much everything can be found there, but you can obviously find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all the usual social media machine. I'm all over that stuff. So yeah, just put my name into Google and you'll find everything that you need, I think.
Great. Okay, Will, thank you very much.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you very, very much indeed.
Cheers. And many thanks once again to Will McNichol for sitting down with me and having a conversation at Spring Hill Manor down in the Cotswolds for the annual RMMGA gathering. It was a great pleasure to talk to Will, and an even bigger pleasure to hear him play. His new album, Dragonflies, Frogs and Bumblebees, was released this year, and it's an absolute belter. I highly recommend that you give that a listen as soon as you can. And if you're of a mind, you can also pick up the Tablature book, which Will has published, Tablature and Notation. It's a beautiful book, spiral bound, and it has all the songs and show notes, information about the songs and compositions. And I've had a look through it. I bought one from him at the gathering. Let's say it's rather challenging, just to put not too fine a point on it. But the music is wonderful. I'm looking forward to picking up some of his tunes, seeing what I can learn from that book. Will will be performing and giving a workshop at this year's Ullapool Guitar Festival, which is running this year from the 5th of October through to the 7th. That's Ullapool up in the northwest of Scotland. Also there will be Clive Carroll and Tristan Sume, who Will mentioned during the interview. You can find more information about that if you visit ullapoolguitarfestival.com. So thank you all for listening to this, the first episode of Acoustic Guitar I.O. I'm Cam's your host. If you have any feedback for the show, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me on CAMS, that's CAMS, at acousticguitar.io. I will also be publishing on the Steam blockchain. You can find me there at steemit.com, steemit.com/@acousticguitar. I plan to be publishing more on the Steam blockchain, and if you are of a mind, you can come along and sign up and we can strike up a relationship over there on the Steam blockchain. Thank you all for listening. I've been CAMS, and I will speak to you on the next one. Bye for now.